Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. And I think that's particularly appropriate given tonight's show. My guest is Alana Simmons, and she is the founder of the Hate Won't Win movement, which was started in light of the church massacre that took place at the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, on June 17th, 2015. That night, a Bible study was held where a white stranger visited and was invited into a predominantly black church. The members there invited the stranger into their Bible study, and he in turn shot and killed 9 people. In the bond hearing of the shooter, Alana Simmons, the granddaughter of Reverend Daniel L. Simmons, Sr., who was one of the victims, said these words: "It's my understanding that the purpose of the shooting was to initiate a race war. And although my grandfather and the other victims died at the hands of hate, they lived in love and they preached love, and their legacies will be love. This display of forgiveness by the families and their plea for mercy on your soul is a true testament to how they lived. And so hate won't win." And so with that said, let me welcome Alana. Alana, once again, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good. I am. Thank you for having me on today.
Well, it's my pleasure. I think it's always important to bring to light anything that has to do with love or things that do not seem like love, because love is ultimately the answer to all of our problems in this world, and this certainly was a significant event, and I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome. You wanted to maybe tell us a little bit about how you happened to form the movement and what it's about.
Sure. What you read was pretty much the overview of how it, the hashtag Hate Won't Win got started. After the shooting, and I said those words at the bond hearing of the shooter, it was apparently being recorded live on a lot of national news outlets. And despite my ignorance to that fact, the Hate Won't Win hashtag formed itself, and it essentially went viral. I wanted to use that hashtag to create a call to action for the community. I'm not a native of South Carolina, and I had only been to Charleston maybe once or twice since my grandfather moved there. And just the display of love from the community and from people that we knew and people that we didn't know really humbled me as I was sitting through those court proceedings, because the action of hate essentially brought us to the place that we were, but the other actions of love kind of carried us through the process that it is that we had to go through and that we're still going through in the loss of my grandfather. And so I wanted to have a call to action to the hashtag Hate Won't Win. And so I took this platform And I used one of the interviews to launch a social media challenge. And what I did was I asked people to go out and show an act of love to someone who is different from them, be it a different race, religion, gender, orientation, so on and so forth, and to post it to their social media accounts with the hashtag #HateWon'tWin. My focus initially was social media because I'm a millennial and all millennials are on social media. But in addition to that, right, but in addition to that, my social media timeline was really, really just divisive. And anyone who has a Facebook or an Instagram or a Twitter or a Snapchat or whatever you have, you know that anytime you post about something racial, anytime you post about something political, it seems to be very, very divisive. And what I wanted to do was to kind of flood people's timeline with the exact opposite. I just didn't want my grandfather's death and the death of the other victims to go on in vain, for their legacies to be continued in hate, or for their death even to be the main reason why people are fighting. I wanted people to identify with how they lived and not how they died.
And how did that work out?
Well, it worked out pretty good. We had, as soon as I started the challenge, we had about 3,000 people to, like, click our page, and they were going out, and they were doing all these challenges, and we created a logo with a black hand and a white hand, making a heart with the words "Hate Won't Win" in the middle, and the community had, like, a really, really good response to it, and we could see people worshiping together, like never before. We could see people coming together like never before. And it was just a really good feeling to know that in honor of my grandfather, people were willing to tear down the walls of fear of the unknown, of people who are different from them. And they were willing to build that bridge of understanding to lead to love. And so at Senator Pinckney's funeral, we had the opportunity to meet President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama. And as most politicians do, they asked, is there anything that they could do for us? And I told them about our social media challenge. I gave them a T-shirt. I told them what we were doing and what we were trying to do. And they were so impressed with what it is that we were doing. Our President Obama, you know, said, well, you know, I have a couple followers on Twitter, so I think I can help with that. And they, you know, took their gift and they kind of left. And when I got on Twitter like a couple hours later, I saw that he really did tweet out the hashtag #HateWon'tWin, a picture of himself and Michelle Obama holding up the T-shirt and basically saying that they were so impressed and humbled by the display of grace shown by our family and the family of the other victims. And that kind of took our following base up a whole lot. If you could imagine, a lot of people follow the president. And so they saw, they took the hashtag and they searched it and they found us. And so we now have about almost 30,000 between Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram of followers just on social media who are out there and who are taking the challenge and who are making themselves culturally aware of the things that are divisive and taking that awareness and having a call to action in their own lives to build those bridges between communities who are different.
That's beautiful. Has there been any backlash that has been unpleasant as a result of your movement?
Surprisingly, no. And I thought I'd get that question.
That's great.
And to my knowledge, I mean, so they haven't contacted me. But everyone, I think, can identify with having someone dislike them because of who they are or what they think or how they feel. And that more communities or certain communities, especially communities of color, can identify with that feeling a lot more than others. But at the end of the day, we are all people. And at some point in everyone's life, they've probably experienced someone being discriminatory or someone being, you know, ignorant to their privilege or someone, you know, being hateful or even bullying. A lot of people have dealt with bullying, adults and children. And so with that, I think it really strikes a chord with them that, you know, I'm not the only one who feels like this, and I don't just have to feel like this. I can take a stand. I can be an upstander and not a bystander to the things that we're seeing. And it's kind of hard to ignore the truth that surrounded this situation. Racial reconciliation was something that I believe was dwindling down as far as the agenda of the people. We just weren't really hearing about it, even though it was still an issue in everyday lives. It just wasn't an issue that was on a headline. But this kind of brought it to the forefront because although there may have been racially charged shootings before, this one happened in 2015. This one happened to young and old people who were in a church just having a Bible study, who just invited someone in of a different race because he claimed to have wanting to hear about the Word of God. And there was no way that anyone could say that or could debate that this wasn't pure and unadulterated racism and hatred. And because no one could debate that fact, it had to have been addressed as it was.
Absolutely. Well, it's a horrible event and a horrible example of the racism that still exists in our society. And, you know, I love what you're saying about how you're trying to get people to empathize based on their own experiences with hate or discrimination of whatever kind. What is it, in your opinion, that that makes racism still such a I'm trying to think of how to say it. Why do we still have it? I just don't get it.
Well, I think that we still have it because we haven't been addressing it correctly. We've been addressing the issue of racism as a legal thing, as like we've been addressing it as, you know, we're going to fight for our rights. You cannot legally discriminate against me. So we've been addressing it more as a head issue and not a heart issue. My issue, obviously, we need to have laws that protect people, and I will advocate for them and lobby for them and do everything in my power to make sure that we have them. But that's once people have committed a crime. My number one cause is to address people's hearts. I want to know why this hate is in your heart. I want to know how it got there. And again, I think that that's why we haven't really seen a lot of growth in individual people who are still having their biases and their discriminations and the hatred that they carry around. I also think that it's very, very generational. When you think about people and where they form their opinions and how they get their ideals and their beliefs, it comes from their families. It comes from the things that they surround themselves by. And whether someone teaches you to discriminate or whether they just look the other way when they see discrimination happening, either way, it is affording people the mindset that this is okay. It's okay for this to happen. It's not a big deal. And it in South Carolina, and I'm not from South Carolina, but it's no surprise to me that a shooting happened. It's no surprise to me that it was racially charged. I wasn't even too surprised that it was in a church, because if you watch the news enough, it happens every day. The surprise to me was that it involved my family and someone close to me. And
sure.
Yeah, and so that was, and I think the surprise to the nation was that it happened to people who were undebatably innocent.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, it's really a tragedy in this day and age that we haven't come to heal what is within ourselves that causes hatred and feelings of superiority over other people. It just boggles my mind that people haven't found healing within themselves, because I think ultimately that's the problem, is that people at some level don't like themselves very much, and so they try to feel superior over people that they think are less than themselves. What do you think about that?
I'm not completely mad at that theory. I certainly think that there's a superiority complex in people who are racist, or people who have that kind of hate in their heart, because it really doesn't even have to be black and white. It can be a lot. It can be people who are, you know, completely hateful towards people who identify with different religions, or who worship differently, or who dress differently, or who look differently. And I definitely do think that a superiority complex is a big part of that. I think another part of it is fear. I believe that everything that we do as humans is out of fear or out of love. As a simplistic example, work. Everyone goes to work for one or two reasons. You either love what you do, or you're scared to not go because you're scared of what would happen if you don't go to work. And so everything that we do, if you really think about it, everything that we do is either out of fear or out of love. And I believe that the superiority complex that accompanies hatred comes out of fear. Fear of the unknown and fear of not being as superior or as what, you know, you feel that you are. And it's a prideful sin, and it's a sin that has plagued our country since its conception. And I think that we are certainly paying the price for what our ancestors, or what some people's ancestors, did. And my hope, especially for Hate Won't Win, is that we will bring communities together, because there, despite the number of people who are going back and forth about it every day on the news, every day on social media, every day even just in person, there are a lot of people out there who have a heart for reconciliation and who have the desire to see reconciliation, and who are just really just sick and tired of the divisiveness that is just kind of plaguing every system that we have, even church. Sunday morning is like the most segregated day in the entire country, and that's because most people are in church on Sunday morning. And so you have people who, church is divided by color, it's divided by culture, it's divided by socioeconomic class, it's divided by location, it's just divided by denomination. There's so many different things that we allow to divide us, and I think that people are getting to the point that they're kind of sick of it, and I want Hate Won't Win to be the organization to bring people together.
Well, what do you think some of the answers are to find healing from this divisiveness that exists and that's been passed down through the generations?
Well, I think the first thing that we need to do is we need to admit to the truth. Even if we go to education, and I'm an educator by trade, I used to teach elementary, middle, and high school. if we take education as an example, the history books are very, very whitewashed. They don't go into the details of how just U.S. history really is, or the true accounts of U.S. history. They give, you know, little tiny little pieces of it, and then people grow up ignorant to what really happened historically in our country. And as people start stumbling across different truths, I think that they start identifying more with that, because we weren't taught the truth from the time that we were small. But I think that we weren't taught the truth because there's several different versions of it, because people do not want to admit to what really happened at the conception of this country, because it completely contradicts the values that we say our country stands on. And until we face the truth, or until communities, especially white communities, face the truth of what it is that is going on right now and what has gone on in the past, there cannot be an extension of grace from other communities who have been hurt from them. In our situation, in the situation with Mother Emanuel, a lot of people were completely shocked that there was this, "I forgive you, that may God have mercy on your soul" rhetoric from the families. The people who should be hurt the absolute most were the first people, and probably some of the only people, to extend grace to the man, to the one man who intended to harm them the most, and to the man who killed their family members. And everyone couldn't really understand or wrap their mind around that. But what I like to use, I like to use analogies, this was a radical truth. This was so left that there was no debating a motive. There was no debating a mental incapacity. There was no debating, you know, someone else kind of forcing him to do this, or someone taught him how to do this, or anything. That none of all of those things were concluded to be inconclusive. Like, they were not, that wasn't the reason. The reason was exactly what it looked like. They were killed because they were black, and that was the end of it. And because no one could argue that, and because there was a radical truth, then there could be a radical grace extended. We didn't need to keep talking about why they were killed, because we knew why they were killed. We didn't have to kind of argue and debate about the facts and whether or not it was intentional or unintentional, whether or not there was a psychotic break, or whether he was in this great state of mind. We didn't have to debate any of those things. We had all the answers up front. And when you have the right answer, or when you have the right question, you can get the right answer. And I think that the truth will, as cliche as it sounds, set us free of all of the tensions that have been really just tearing our country apart.
Well, I hope you're right about that. I think it's a remarkable example of Christian love to be able to extend that grace of forgiveness to somebody who obviously doesn't know the first thing about love. And, it really touched my heart when I heard about that. And ultimately, don't you think that that is the pathway to finding healing within ourselves and with each other, to extend
Absolutely.
Forgiveness?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, again, I was telling you, were just kind of stuck on how could you all forgive? Why did you extend this forgiveness? But I'm a Christian woman, and as a Christian woman, I don't necessarily understand everything that it is that I do, but I do it out of obedience to God and what he told me to do. When I went in the courtroom, I had every intention on not saying anything, even as the proceeding started, and I was sitting on the front row with my father and my brother, and the judge said, "Hey, you guys are going to have a chance to speak." I was the one who said in not so many words that we shouldn't say anything. And after Miss Nadine Collier got up and she said, you know, that she really got she was in a lot of physical and emotional pain. You could see that it was really taking a toll on her to even walk up to the stand to be able to say whatever it was that she was about to say. And when she said, "I forgive you," it really humbled everyone in that courtroom and everyone who heard her, because that was a true testament to her mother and the strength that her mother raised her with and the faith that that strength stood on. And I believe that that is what is getting our families through all of this, and that is what will get the country through all of this. We have to be able to rely on obedience to God, and that's really what I did in that moment. God laid on my heart to say what it is that I said, and I just, in obedience to him, said it.
Well, it's remarkable and just a beautiful expression of love. And I agree totally with what you were saying earlier about how there are just two states, love and fear. There's a marvelous Jesuit, he's deceased now, his name was Anthony DeMello, and that's exactly what he said. He said there only are two states, love and fear, and anything that does not come from love is fear-based. And there's so much negativity existing in our world today. It's so important for us to find the pathway to love if we're going to find healing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. Well, tell us how people can get involved in your movement.
Awesome. So the Hate Won't Win movement has five initiatives. Our overall objective is to advocate for unity through demonstrations of love. And that's what our social media challenge is about, and that's our media initiative to get people, to mobilize people to go out and show acts of love and to flood their media channels with it. But we have four other initiatives. Our first initiative is in education, and with our education movement, we are now in the we have been in the process of creating school clubs and organizations. So, like I said, I'm an educator by trade, and so I always like to invite people, teachers, students, to come in, and even administration to come in and talk with us about how your school can get involved with the Hate Won't Win movement, how your students can take the Hate Won't Win movement to their classrooms and find out how it looks for their schools. We've been working with primarily middle schools and high schools, but it's extended to all of education, just because I believe that's a very, very important component to making sure that this, to being preventative. We don't want for people to be able to even have the kind of mindset that allows discrimination, bullying, or hate to be acceptable. And in order to do that, I think it's really important to start that from the time that they're little. So that's our education initiative. We have a political initiative where we are pushing for hate crime legislation. We have been doing a lot of talking with the Anti-Defamation League and with the Southern Poverty Law Center, and we're working with a lot of different community organizations who can help to get legislation passed, especially and particularly in South Carolina, that for hate crimes, because currently it does not exist. In the beginning of all of this, the Confederate flag was flying high over the State House, and for years, lawmakers were fighting to try to get that flag down. And after pictures surfaced of the shooter with him holding the Confederate flag and I guess talking about his true representation outside of his heritage, and after Representative Jenny Horn, a descendant of a Confederate and a Republican whose party supported the flag flying over the State House, gave a very passionate speech about why that flag should come down, if for nothing else, in honor of the Emanuel Nine, particularly Senator Pinckney, who was their peer. The flag came down, And it's those kinds of things that we need people who are politically aware and involved to join the Hate Won't Win movement in helping us to get that kind of legislation passed. We have a religious movement where we are working with several different, not just Christian churches, but we're working with a lot of different religions and seeing how they can get this message into their communities. Most religions are based in love. And so the Hate Won't Win movement identifies with a lot of different religions. And we certainly want for people of faith to be in the forefront of this movement of love. It just makes the most sense. Outside of that, I talked about the media initiative. People can certainly get involved by following us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and not just following us, but more importantly, and I cannot stress this enough, going out and actually taking the social media challenge, because that is what people need to see. We need for people to see that there are people out there who are still going out showing acts of love to people who are different from them and who are courageous enough to post them onto their social media accounts and challenge others to take the same just stand. And so that's a big one that we're pushing for. And let me see, I said education, politics, religion. Oh, community and family. And so we want families talking about this. We want community partners talking about this. We want them also doing something about this. We've had the honor to be just traveling all over the country to spread the Hate Won't Win message to several different community organizations. And it proved itself to be very beneficial to the organization, not just to have a testimony and an account of what happened and what it is that we're doing, but for them to individually take a challenge that looked right for their organization. And we've been honored by a myriad of organizations, and we've also been invited by a lot of different locations to come out, and it's just been great. We've been to Tacoma, Washington. We've been honored by Public Allies. We've worked with the Anti-Defamation League. We've been with the Faith and Politics Organization, with the Southern Poverty Law Center, and if I keep naming stuff, I'm going to forget somebody. We've just really, really had a good network of individuals who have a passion for reconciliation in our communities, and we certainly invite organizations and families to join us in having that same passion for reconciliation, because it certainly does affect us all. So overall, if anyone wants to get involved, they can join us and find more information about it on our website at www.hatewon'twinmovement.com. And again, they could follow us on all of our social media outlets. It's at Hate Won't Win Movement. And they can like and share and call their family to get them involved, their family and their friends and their organizations to get them involved in reconciliation.
Now, if people want to contact you directly, can they do that?
Yes. There's a Contact Me tab on the website. And if you type a message into that, it will be it will come straight to my phone, and I'll be able to respond directly to people. A lot of times it goes through my marketing director, but I do get it, and I do end up responding.
Now, has this become your primary focus, Alana?
It has. I'm a person who is used to doing a lot, but during the trial, I really couldn't work my full-time job because I was traveling so much back and forth to South Carolina prior to me relocating to South Carolina. But outside of working a nonprofit full-time, I'm also a full-time realtor and a part-time teacher. So, and I know none of them match, but that's kind of why that makes me special, I guess. I work on the foundation board at my alma mater, Elizabeth City State University. I teach private voice and piano lessons. I'm a realtor. I work with buyers and sellers in the Columbia, South Carolina area, and I work the Hate Want One movement.
My goodness, how do you find the time?
I sleep with my laptop every day, if that gives you any indication of what my life looks like.
Oh, well, I've really enjoyed having you on the show tonight. I think you carry a really powerful message. And anything that you'd like to say in conclusion tonight?
I just wanted to thank you again for inviting me onto the show, and to thank your listeners for listening. And I, again, invite them to join us in the reconciliation as a community. And, again, thank you.
Well, you certainly are welcome, and I thank you, too.
All right.
So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Good night, and God bless.